He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
And a lot is going on this particular edition of Car Keys. We are sometimes dateless, but by what topics I will discuss, some people will remember what week this show was done. First of all, General Motors is on strike. We'll start off with that because just under 50,000 people are not in their production line jobs this morning of this show. And that means not a vehicle will be produced in General Motors plants all across America. I do not know what happens about plants in Mexico and or elsewhere, but at least in the United States, which probably is a good thing for some dealers, because as I go by some dealers, it looks like to me they've got burdensome loads of vehicles in their parking lots, and dealers have to pay for those, or at least they have to finance the holding of those vehicles until they sell them off their lots or some variant of that kind of thing. So some dealers will be probably very happy to sell off their lots while they're waiting for General Motors to settle the strike with their workers, which may or may not happen very quickly as we go forward. But that's what's going on nationally with General Motors today. The other thing about General Motors in Car Keys news this particular edition is that there's a big recall going out. And I have a particular interest in this recall because General Motors has had a problem with the recall that's going on. It has to do with the braking system, mostly in their large SUVs or SUV-type vehicles, which goes back to at least 15. But I'm not sure it doesn't go back to as early as 2006. Because I owned a GM-built, Isuzu-branded version of a GM-built SUV, which I think was a 2006.
The Envoy.
And the Ascender. And I had it for years. That replaced Isuzu's Troopers, which you and I, Jill, well know, because we had, I think, a fairly fond relationship with our Troopers, or I did at any rate. But the Ascender was built
on
a GM platform,
GMC
Envoy badge of the Trailblazer or Blazer Envoy versions of those. And
neither one of us had great luck with our Ascenders.
No. Did you have an Ascender?
For a minute.
Oh, for a minute. Okay. Well, I had an Ascender and it rusted away. Everything about it was looking beautiful outside of the underbody of that vehicle. But what it also had was a very poor, in my opinion, and many others, I'm sure, braking system for that vehicle, which I believe is eerily about identical to what General Motors is doing right now. By I believe they're recalling something like 3.5 million vehicles because of an apparent vacuum booster type of problem with the braking system.
Now, is that solvable in a in service, or is that
discussing whether or not they can do it with downloads and software updates? I do not believe it's a software update or was a software updatable thing on my Isuzu Ascender. It never got resolved. I made a couple of issues about it with my Isuzu dealer when Isuzu was still actually had a dealer around here, and they were vanishing about as fast as the Isuzu Troopers were. And then I then took it to a GM dealer, and it was mostly, I would say, generally poo-pooed by both the Isuzu Service Department and General Motors Service Departments as being, oh, it happens with all of them. Well, what apparently happens with all of them is now coming to roost as a problem for General Motors, except that they are so far in the articles that I've seen only acknowledging going back as far as 2015.
And what is very frustrating about that is, you know, we're talking about essentially 12 or 13 years, even though 2015 is only four.
True.
And it's all about limiting liability and responsibility, et cetera. But still, the fact is a problem's a problem's a problem.
An interesting thing about the article, the latest article I read, was it says it apparently is more prevalent during slow speeds. And I will say that that is where I noticed my pedal situation, braking situation with my Ascender, in that the pedal was very soft and it also went down to the floor almost. Or you could push it to the floor. It never actually, under most normal braking situations, would actually go to the floor with the normal braking force that one applies when they're braking a vehicle to stop. But I noticed that it was not a strong feeling, and this is apparently what is going on now. So that's the General Motors story for this particular show. Let's see. Now, the other thing that's going on at this particular show is the bombing of the Saudi Arabian oil production or gas, well, whatever it is, a supplying company, which is the largest in the world or close to it, if not it. And it's causing lots of drama in the department. Well, not drama. Well, drama probably politically and internationally. But then we translate that into what goes on with plants that get damaged or go offline for rebuilding or, you know, refilling.
Which gets us to supply and demand and prices and how we are.
Guess what has not happened as of this particular show? The prices haven't gone up in our two stations that I pass when I come to this show. They're still at what they've been for a couple of weeks, which is how long that will last, I don't know, because oil jumped. For those who listen to the news and know what's going on, oil prices, which means the barrels of oil price, jumped up to 20%, and now it's going down. There's plenty. Wait.
Exactly.
Yes, there's plenty of fuel around, folks. There's plenty of oil around. Our dear president says he'll release the storage oil if necessary. But before this particular story hit, everybody has said for weeks that oil prices and well, therefore, retail gasoline prices were going to remain low and go down, and they have been doing so, and I'll get to that in a minute, for the foreseeable future. And now that has suddenly braked to a stop. I hope they weren't using Isuzu brakes or General Motors brakes.
Or maybe they are.
Maybe they are. Maybe we like that. As gas companies immediately want to start raising some of the prices where they were probably below what the national average has been for a couple of weeks, which in Massachusetts in many places, as well as in Connecticut in quite a few places, has been below the national average, incidentally, just for those who care.
And national average, I read yesterday, Sunday, the 15th.
270?
No, 257.
257, yes. Well, I paid 229 in Massachusetts over this last weekend as low as, and
where?
That was a buying club. Price. That
okay,
was
a, so what was this?
And that was artificially incentivized by the fact that I happen to have that Buyers Club's credit card, which you get 10 cents a gallon over below what the retail. So
well,
the retail was
you.
$2.39.
Okay, that's
okay?
Right.
And at a Cumberland Farms a place there, the retail was $2.51. The buying the member plan was $2.41.
Eastern or Western Mass?
Eastern Mass.
Okay. Which typically has a
which typically has and I'll tell you where
price.
Else it's low is in
Rhode
off
Island.
The Mass Pike at exit 5 or 6 in Chicopee, Mass, where the prices are very clearly
Chicopee
similar
is notoriously,
to,
by the way,
notoriously
low,
aggressively low, either at the buying clubs and or the stations right around the buying clubs, Stop and Shop included. So we're not going to see excessively high gas prices, I hope, before things rebalance themselves as A, the Aramco plant gets up and running again, and or B, the speculators who are driving the prices of oil barrels, which translates into gasoline prices and all that, heating oil too. Heating oil is at $2.36 in many places off the main suppliers that advertise them places like Just Oil, which means they don't give you any service and they don't sell anything but oil, whereas the major suppliers around here, oil is up and around the 275, 279 range as high as, and maybe stabilized at that. I don't know what the buying plans are because I don't participate in the advanced buying plans anymore.
Just, in terms of fossil fuels and the abolition of them and the Green New Deal, et cetera, such as it is. Do you hear, is there anything written in about heating oil? I just haven't heard
they don't talk about heating oil a whole lot. It basically, of course, you and I are concerned about gasoline and maybe diesel fuel for diesel owners. Diesel fuel is over $3 in many places. But heating oil is not part of car keys in general, except that I happened to pass a place on 22 going south. Two signs, which as of over this weekend, were saying oil prices, heating oil was $236.9 a gallon, which is pretty low.
Okay? Right. I just think that, you know, people need to,
and
in their
they
thinking,
may change
incorporate
today too, but
their whole, you know, it's not just.
I don't know. But then, you know, we talk about this, the artificiality of pricing of gasoline and diesel, which is as true in this show and today as it has been forever when prices have been fluctuating like the tides. And you also have the increasingly numerous sales of electric cars and hybrid cars, which are gasoline and electric, which all cause a reduction in the purchase of fossil fuels. And when you get too many of those, you sit there and worry, the oil companies start worrying about their profits because they don't sell enough gasoline to keep their profits up. So then the prices come down. And so I will tell listeners who want to listen that this whole thing, yes, it's too bad an oil plant got droned and hit. But this goes on periodically, and it really basically gives the speculator people who are
a little bit of action on their Monday
action
mornings
on
or
their money,
Tuesday,
and
whatever.
Somebody's making money on what goes on without the benefit of the drivers benefiting from that. Usually, we don't benefit because the prices go up for us. So enough on that one. Now I had a test drive. I've had a test drive in the last 10 days or so of a Jeep Gladiator, which is the pickup truck variant of the four-door Wrangler. And the unique part of my test drive was it happened to be with a manual transmission Gladiator, which is a six-speed manual, versus the eight-speed automatic, which is the one that 98% of the Gladiators being sold are having.
But
that
they
is an automatic.
They made it with.
But they do make a manual shift version. And a local resident in our broadcast area happens to have wanted to order one. It took them a few extra weeks to get it because they were delayed introduction as far as the production was going, since the plant seemed to think that automatics were the rule of the production line for the first few weeks that the Gladiator became available. And so I got to drive this vehicle, and it is a very pleasant drive. The Gladiator itself, I think I've reported on in the past. I have driven the automatic one, and it's a very tied down version of the four-door Wrangler. It is a slightly longer platform and has a pickup bed behind it, so it has a different use factor to it than the passenger car carrying characteristic of the Wrangler, the Jeep Wrangler, and the four-door one. But it drives. It's a very 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 tightly put together vehicle in that it is solid as a piece of granite. There's not a rattle to it, but the manual transmission was very pleasant to drive. The clutch action was very light, to a fault, according to its owner, who said he was having trouble starting up from a stop, modulating the clutch acceleration action, clutch take-up action, with starting off from a stop, and was having trouble getting used to it. I got used to it fairly quickly. I can see how he would, and some people would have some trouble with a clutch modulation.
Normally, I don't know what you're talking about, but having learned to
drive the manual, you know what I'm talking about.
On a Pinto. And then,
that was a long way ago.
Uh-huh. And I wasn't good. I should still go back to it. Well, and then moving on to a friend's BMW, which was like, oh, my God. What a difference.
Yeah. Oh, I've had a variation of manual transmission cars in my career and my stable. And they've ranged from a Mustang GT convertible, which I still have, to a Mazda RX-7, which I still have, to a Mini Cooper, which I don't still have. All of them have slightly different clutch actions, which basically mean it's a different way to start up from. You have to use the clutch in a different way in each of those cars to get the car moving smoothly as opposed to jerkily, okay?
I can do jerkily.
But the Gladiator is a very interesting vehicle. I think I have said on a previous show that I don't think it replaces, it supplants the big three pickups, the Fords, the Dodges, and the Chevrolets.
Was it meant to, or is it?
Well, they're trying to make it deem the advertising and the promotion of it says that it has a very good load-carrying capability and a towing capability, not as great as the big three. But when you look at a Gladiator pickup and a Ford F-150 and a Dodge and Chevy equivalents, it looks like about a three quarters, maybe a two thirds size of those vehicles. So proportionally, you're not going to put the same size load in the Gladiators.
You're not going to get that wood.
I don't think you can get a 4x8. I haven't actually looked at that part. Uh-huh. I don't think you can put a 4x8 flat in the back of a Gladiator pickup, but that maybe you can. Anyways, it's not an 8-foot box in the back. So,
right.
But this owner called it a toy, another toy of his when he got it, and. It's more than a toy. It is a practical vehicle for those who don't need to have the big Ford, Dodges, and Chevy versions. It's probably a very good alternative to the midsize pickup alternatives, which is a Toyota Tacoma, the new Ford Ranger, the GMC and Chevy Colorado Canyon versions.
And the inevitable question, is the gas mileage comparable?
Gas mileage is not going to be too good. I will tell you that I did a gas mileage check on it on a very brief drive around, and you could get as high on a cruise without, you know, having to accelerate. You could get the trip computer or the gas miles per gallon computer to read for a 5-mile stint in the high 20s on the Gladiator, both automatic and manual. The manual would generally be much bigger, more than the automatic in most cases if you were feathering the throttle properly. But most of the time, the MPG, instant MPG, was around 20, below 20 miles per gallon. And instantaneous means at the moment that you're looking at the computer program. It's not an average. For an average, you got to sit there and put it on average and then drive for 10 miles and see what you come up with. And I suspect you're going to come up with a 21 to 24, between 21 and 22 with the automatic. That comes with two engines in the automatic. It only comes with the V6 right now in the manual version. In the Gladiator version of it, although there's a diesel supposed to be on the way, which might get it up into the 20, maybe 29 to 35 MPG in some instances. But it's a fun vehicle. You know, I almost said, you know, be I were 40 years younger, I might like to have one of those.
Oh, you and your excuses. But,
well,
your choice.
You know, that's right.
You have to
I'm too practical now, so I won't get one, but it's a good drive for those who want it.
Right.
I have now seen a second Gladiator around our corner, but I haven't seen too many on the road anywhere that I've been over the past, let's say, month and a half that they've actually been out and available. So that does the Gladiator part of the show. We talked, last week maybe or 2 weeks ago, we talked about two amazing new cars, the Taycan, which is an all-electric Porsche, and then the newest Corvette, which is we called, I think, exciting new cars. I think Jay and I both agreed to a certain degree that they were exciting new vehicles to be purchased. And this is price being no object. Now I've got a third one. And the third one is just arriving. I don't know when it's arriving in the two-door trim, but it's, I believe, the four-door is arriving maybe at Land Rover, Range Rover dealers near us. Either as I speak or very soon hereafter. It's the new Land Rover reinvented version of the one of the original really rugged Land Rovers called the Defender. And there's a great YouTube advertorial on that. It runs about 15 minutes long, and it is really a very interesting presentation by Land Rover for its new Defender. It looks the part, in my opinion. It's a modern-day version of the original, very squared-off, two-door Defender that was, I believe, the only Defender built for a long time, although there's now a two-door and a four-door version. That means two different body lengths and two different interior passenger configurations, meaning seven passenger with the long four-door version and they say 5 or 7 passenger with the two-door version. I don't think the two-door version can hold seven people. But anyways, I watched this YouTube for twice now on it, so I can talk about it. There's not much to talk about it, but if anybody's a Defender or Land Rover Defender aficionado and is a past owner of the old ones or a new generation Land Rover Range Rover aficionado, it is something that you should look at and see if you have the money to be able to buy it. I think it's going to be quite expensive, certainly in the four-door version and even in the two-door version. But I have a problem with all these new cars, and that is the electronicization of the componentry and the operations of these vehicles. Along the way of this YouTube version, and I watched two versions. I watched the promo by Land Rover and the another promo by a review by somebody who reviewed it. And the reviewer, along the way of his 21-minute presentation, said something about that there are like, maybe he only said five, but he could have said 15 electronic modules buried in the system. And the question of reliability comes up. Because when you think of a Land Rover, Range Rover, of course, you think of the past eras, the past versions, which were
mechanical
and extraordinarily reliable because you didn't have repairable because
right.
you didn't have electronics buried in that are basically chipboards which could melt down or get overheated or do something.
Or get confused.
Out in the middle of a desert, shut the whole thing down, and you couldn't just get out and open the hood and diagnose a problem and probably get the car running or vehicle running again. And one of the comments was that, I read the comments afterwards, which is sort of the online reviewers of you and I. Let's say we watch something, then we have a comment, and we post it. And some of the postings about the Defender were very amusing the problem of reliability of
right.
the modules and all that. Anyways, I think the Defender looks fabulous. I am beyond being able to buy one of those for a toy, but I'd do the same thing if I were 40 years younger and had the bucks to do it and they had the same vehicle.
Robin's new wish list, if I were 40 years younger.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's the way I'm going to look at it. My listeners can laugh with us as about that kind of dreaming. But what really bothers me, or I don't know whether I'm bothered or not, is I'm waiting for the new version of the Ford Bronco to show up, and I have not seen any pictures of it yet. But all I could think of watching this Defender reintroduction is that the Ford Bronco would be – Ford should be advised to, A, their engineering department and design department should be looking at this Defender introduction with great – fear, because this is how the new Bronco should be, because there are so many vestiges of the old Defender that you can see in the new physical form of the new Defender, plus the upgrades of modern technology, which may or may not be a boon. But more to the point of the view of the vehicle, the Defender looks really the part, and you can see a lot of the old Defender and the ruggedness in that. And I sure am hoping that Ford's Bronco would do the same thing. And there's been a lot of guessing about which size the new Ford Bronco would be. Would it be like the original ones that I had in 69 and 73, which were only two-door, and they grew from there on out into large, big Blazer-sized eventually before they disappeared, and with many iterations along the way. And the real Bronco that everybody loves is the original Bronco, the way everybody is supposed to have loved the original Land Rover Defender. And if the new Bronco could be a modern-day version looking like the old, which means very square, no sloped backs.
No elephants on the Evoque.
No, that's right. And with the new proper appropriate technology but retaining the ruggedness, Ford would have a winner on its hand the way I think Range Rover, Land Rover is going to have on its hand with the Defender. I think this is going to be a very popular vehicle for a large segment of people who will go out and order one, both in the U.S. and internationally, and the Bronco would be well advised to follow suit. And, I've gotten all those things. The YouTube review of the Land Rover is for everybody to look at if they've got the time to do it. As I said, the Ford Bronco launch is going to be very interesting to me by comparison to what I've just reviewed and what I've just seen in the Defender launch, which I think is going to be a fabulously successful event for Land Rover, Range Rover. And I think Range Rover needs one. I think a lot of their vehicles have grown big and bulky, and the Defender is both in its four-door and two-door versions offer just about a complete variety of what many people might like in size.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.